Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Tom Ricks, the Washington Post's senior Pentagon correspondent, has a new book called Fiasco, The American Military Misadventure in Iraq. We'll talk about the book tomorrow on Fresh Air. Earlier today, I asked him what he's hearing from his sources about the American response to the war between Israel and Hezbollah. Tom Ricks, welcome back to Fresh Air. I'm wondering if you think that it is any more likely that the U.S. will have a military strike against Iran. There's like three different reasons why the U.S. might be considering that, three reasons I'm aware of. One is the nuclear option that Iran seems to be developing. The other is that Iran backs Hezbollah. And the third is that General George Casey said that the Iranians appear to be backing extremist Shia in Iraq by providing weapons, IED technology, and training, and that, in fact, they're doing some of that training in Iran. So does it look like a U.S. military strike against Iran is becoming more likely?
I don't think so. I think for the reasons you lay out, that the Bush administration is growing increasingly unhappy with Iran. The problem is the more the United States talks about a military option, the more it scares our allies, who we need in order to have a solid diplomatic front in dealing with Iran. And so I think the United States has kind of backed off talking about a military option for Iran. But it's the Middle East, and anything can happen.
Is this controversial within the administration? Are there people taking sides within the administration or the military?
Yeah, I think inside the military, there's a lot of unhappiness with the idea of going after Iran militarily. Iran is a very big, very powerful, and relatively rich country in the Middle East. It would be a much more difficult operation than even Iraq has been. And people talk about just doing airstrikes, but it's not clear what that would lead to. Air power alone generally has not been an effective use of military force.
Now, I read that there was an Israeli memo that was leaked of a contingency plan for attacking Iran on its own if the U.S. doesn't. What do you know about that?
There was talk of this a few months ago. I actually read a U.S. military study of that option. It would be enormously difficult to carry out without some sort of nod and a wink from the United States, because in order to get to Iran, you'd have to fly Israeli aircraft either across Iraq, where the United States clearly would know they were there, or the whole way across Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia likely would not welcome that. And so I think it would be very hard to do that for the Israelis without the Americans giving them a green light. And so it almost would be like the United States doing it. People in the Middle East would blame the United States for allowing it to happen.
What have you heard from your sources in the Pentagon about our strategy, the U.S. strategy in the Middle East now in the war between Israel and Hezbollah?
What I'm hearing broadly from defense experts lately in the military, retired military strategy experts, is a real broad unhappiness with the situation. These are guys who have spent 20 or 30 years steeped in these issues, and their general attitude seems to be, I don't know about you, but I'm heading down for the basement and waiting for the storm to blow over. But I think that misses one basic aspect of the Bush administration's approach to the Middle East. And it was captured best by Paul Wolfowitz when he was at the Pentagon. He said to me one day, if you liked 9/11, then keep up the policy of containment, keep up the policy of stability. And this is where the Bush administration several years ago split with the so-called realpolitik or the realist. It does not have the ambition of having stability in the Middle East. In many ways, it has sided with instability. It's rolled the dice. It said, let's change the dynamics. Let's change the politics of the Middle East. This is captured in the phrase you heard a lot a couple of years ago, let's drain the swamp. So we kind of rolled the dice in Iraq, and we're allowing the Israelis to roll the dice right now against Hezbollah in Lebanon. And it's a very bumpy ride for us. It's a much more dynamic situation than it used to be. But we have allied ourselves with the forces of radical change in the Middle East. And it'll be interesting to see the response from the radicals on the other side.
Well, you know, in your book about Iraq, Fiasco, you describe the Bush administration as brinksmen. Do you think they still are brinksmen after all the problems they've run into in Iraq?
I think they still have the brinkish impulse, if you will, but we are realizing that politically it's a lot harder to carry off now, partly because they enjoyed the benefit of the doubt after 9/11 and after a successful invasion of Afghanistan, and they were saying the rules of war have changed, this is going to be different. Well, now the rules of war have reasserted themselves against the U.S. presence in Iraq, and I think they've gotten their nose bloodied a bit, and it's harder to bring along the Republican Party, let alone the Democrats.
My guest is Tom Ricks, senior Pentagon correspondent for The Washington Post. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tom Ricks, The Washington Post's senior Pentagon correspondent. We're discussing what he's hearing from sources about the American response to the war between Israel and Hezbollah. Now, I read that American officials don't expect the U.S. to participate in an international peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon, if there is one. Is that because we're stretched so thin in Iraq, or is that because of other reasons?
I think it's for both. I think it's very easy for the United States to say, great idea, fellas, but we're tapped out at the moment. We don't have any troops available on the shelf for you. I think the second unspoken reason for the U.S. not participating in a peacekeeping force in Lebanon is they don't think it's going to work. If it does get put together, the force will be ineffective and unable to militarily confront Hezbollah, and it will be attacked by Hezbollah, and it will be seen as an occupation force, no matter what the impulse is in putting it together. So I think they're saying, let's just take a pass on this. Let them try to put it together. You know, the Turkish government might lead it, or the French military might lead it, but we'll applaud from the sidelines on this one.
In your book about the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq, you write that the U.S. experience in Iraq may come to resemble Israel's painful occupation of parts of southern Lebanon. And you were there referring to Israel's 1982 invasion and its subsequent occupation. But I'm wondering if you think that Israel has, in a way, taken a page out of the Iraq playbook in its strategy in dealing with Hezbollah through an air campaign.
That's a good question. What I don't understand about what's going on now with Israel is I don't see how they can achieve militarily the objective they've stated if they only use air power. They've said they wanted to extirpate Hezbollah, to break it as a military power. And ultimately, the only way you can do that is by putting your young men and women on the ground, in the mud, and having them slug it out. You cannot do this from the air. And so I think what you're seeing now is a lot of light infantry movement in an attempt to capture major Hezbollah leaders, to destroy their best fighting forces, but not putting in a big armored thrust because they don't want to just drive away Hezbollah. They want to destroy them. And I think you'll see a couple of weeks of this sort of raid and sniping, and then maybe more movement on the ground when they feel they've broken the major Hezbollah units.
What else do you see when you look in the near future in the confrontations between Israel and Hezbollah?
I see a lot of people who I really trust on strategic matters wondering whether Israel knows what it's doing, what Israel really hopes to achieve here. Their stated objective of breaking and destroying Hezbollah is likely not going to happen. Even if they get all these 12,000 Katusha-style rockets, which are fairly short-range rockets, it's already been proven that Hezbollah has larger rockets available to it and simply can fire them from further back in Lebanon. So what do you do, then invade northern Lebanon? So it's not clear to me strategically how Israel could achieve the outcome it has stated it wants to achieve through this operation.
Do you have sources in the Pentagon who are worried about what the war between Israel and Hezbollah will mean for the future of the United States and its military?
Well, in broad terms, yes. The real concern for the United States and Iraq right now is, will that war spread across Iraq's borders? And some people think effectively it already has, that what you have with Hezbollah is an attack by a proxy of Iran on Israel, a proxy of the United States. So effectively, they see this as simply another front in this same confrontation. Other people disagree with that. But regionalization of either war could be a terrible thing in the Middle East. You may see it's possible. I'm not saying it's going to happen. A broader Middle East war. And once that happens, that has global consequences. Most immediately and selfishly for us, it likely would send the price of oil spiraling. And that would have economic repercussions for us and for every other country in the world. You could see fighting break out on another front. One thing that worries me right now is the Turks are very unhappy with some of the Kurds in northern Iraq and have basically threatened to invade northern Iraq to go after some of the Kurdish elements there. So there's a possibility you could see a couple more fronts open in the current fighting.
Well, Tom Ricks, thank you for talking with us. We'll talk more tomorrow about your new book on the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And the title of that book is Fiasco. So that will give our listeners some idea of the conversation we'll have tomorrow. Tom Ricks, thank you very much.
Thank you.